Welcome to the Shir and Svarno Parshas Bamidbar. Sefer Bamidbar, Parshas Bamidbar, as we know, starts off with Kodesh Baruch Hu commanding Moshe Rabbeinu to take a census of the Jewish people, and particularly to take a census of those males who would be eligible to serve in the army. From age 20 and up. Suas Rosh Kol Hadas B'nei Yisrael Mishpucha Osam Levei Savosam. Take a census, literally lift up the head of all of the Jewish people. B'mispar Shemos Kol Zachar L'Gugul Osam. By number of the names, every male, according to their head count. What was the purpose of the census at this particular time? So the Svarno writes as follows. L'Sadram Shikansu la'aretz miyad. Kodesh Baruch Hu's intent was to get the Jewish people organized such that they should be able to go into Eretz Yisrael right away. Again, we know the end of the story. We know that Klal Yisrael, unfortunately, after the Chet HaMeraglim, were forced to wander for an additional 40 years in the desert. There would be another 40 years before they'd go into Eretz Yisrael. But at that particular point in time, that was not what Klal Yisrael expected. They thought we're going in imminently. Again, as the Svarno pointed out, in the earlier Parshios, in Parshas Baloscha, it describes how Moshe Rabbeinu says to his father-in-law, Yisro, Nosim anachnu el amokom. We're about to travel in to the place that HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised to us. Are you ready to come with us? They thought they were imminently going into Eretz Yisrael. So if they're imminently going into Eretz Yisrael, they need to be organized. Ishal diglo, everyone has to be assigned to his flag, to his standard, to his shevet, his tribe. And here, so far, what the Svarno has said is not particularly unique. In fact, intuitively, I think we understand that taking a census of the Jewish people at this point is important if they're going to go into Eretz Yisrael. But here the Svarno comes and he adds a twist, which is uniquely Svarno. Bilti milchama. The intent of HaKadosh Baruch Hu was that the Jewish people at this time would enter Eretz Yisrael without any fighting whatsoever. Without a war. Without a war. So, how's that going to work in terms of the current inhabitants of Eretz Yisrael? The Shiva Amimin, the seven nations that inhabit Eretz Yisrael. So says the Svarno, Elishi Panu Ha'umos Mipneya. Originally, the intent was that Klal Yisrael would enter Eretz Yisrael at this particular point in time, and the other nations would throw up their hands and they'd just leave Eretz Yisrael. There wouldn't be any fighting. Klal Yisrael would come into Eretz Yisrael and they would find that the nations had picked up and left. Kemosha Asuk Sasam. As we find indeed that that's what happened, at least with regard to some of the nations who inhabited Eretz Yisrael. Kemo Shehayid, as the Pasuk itself, he quotes the Pasuk in Yeshayah, Perek Yud Zayin, the Pasuk itself there indicates that that was the case. Ba'amro, the Pasuk there writes, Ka'azuvas ha'choresh v'ha'amir, this is just like the abandonment of the Choresh veHa'amir, just like the abandonment of that which they had plowed and that which they had gathered, Asher Ozvu Mipnei Bnei Yisrael, that certain nations or certain groups had abandoned in the face of Bnei Yisrael coming into Eretz Yisrael. In other words, the Pasuk in Yeshayah speaks of a certain group that had inhabited Eretz Yisrael and picked up and left when the Jews came in. Who was that? So the Svarno suggests, Ulai hayu mishpachos mi'agirgoshi. Maybe the people that Yeshayah is referencing are certain families from the nation known as the Girgoshi. Sha'alav amru zal, sha'amad ufana me'elav. Chazal have a tradition that the Girgoshi ran away from Eretz Yisrael, such that when the Jews come into Eretz Yisrael, there weren't seven nations, there were only six nations that they actually waged war against. The Girgashi picked up and left. So says the Svarno, again, a chiddush of the Svarno, what happened in reality with the Girgashi namely, that they just fled from before Bnei Yisrael, so that Bnei Yisrael didn't even have to fight them when they came into Eretz Yisrael. That which the Girgashi did was originally going to happen with all seven nations in Eretz Yisrael. Klal Yisrael here were not preparing for war, really. They were organizing themselves, but the intent was that they would just kind of march into Eretz Yisrael, and they just take over. There wouldn't be any fighting whatsoever. Not miraculous fighting. There wouldn't be any fighting. They wouldn't need any fighting. Nobody would be left there in Eretz Yisrael. So why didn't that happen? So here comes the Sfarno with yet another Chiddush. Uvekilkul hamiraglim hosifu hasheva umos lehora arbaim shana vehutzrach lahacharimam. When the miraglim sinned, and of course we know that the sin of the miraglim caused Klal Yisrael to delay going into Eretz Yisrael for another 40 years, the impact of the sin of the miraglim was not only on Klal Yisrael, it was on the seven nations that inhabited Eretz Yisrael as well. You say, how did the sin of the miraglim impact on the seven nations in Eretz Yisrael? So says the Sfarno, again, a Chiddush. Says the Sfarno, in those 40 years, the seven nations that inhabited Eretz Yisrael got worse and worse from a moral, ethical, spiritual perspective. And whereas, had Klal Yisrael entered Eretz Yisrael when they were supposed to, 40 years before, those nations would not have been so evil. And the decree that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have made against them would simply be, you'll leave Eretz Yisrael. Now, 40 years later, those nations had become so degenerate that in addition to giving Eretz Yisrael to the Jewish people, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a gzeira. He made a decree against these nations that they have to be destroyed. They had become so evil that they needed to be destroyed in their own right, and not simply that their destruction was a way to enable the Jewish people to inhabit Eretz Yisrael. In theory, those nations didn't have to be destroyed. They didn't have to be wiped out. In theory, they could have, the tradition is that the Girgashi picked up and they left. They went to Africa. In theory, they all could have gone to Africa. They could have gone anywhere. But the fact that they had another 40 years to steep and to marinate in their evil made them worthy in their own right of being destroyed. And thus the conquest of Yehoshua served a double purpose. It gave Eretz Yisrael over to the Jewish people, but it also brought the appropriate punishment upon at least six out of these seven nations who apparently deserved to be destroyed because of their own sins, because of their own evil which they had been involved in. Again, a tremendous chiddush of the Sfarno that the original plan did not involve destroying the Shiva Amamin, the seven nations, and in a sense they brought upon themselves the fact that they were worthy of that particular fate. In the same pasuk, the Sfarno has another chiddush, where he points out the following. So when the pasuk describes how Klal Yisrael are to be counted, it uses the phrase "b'mispar shemos." Everyone should be counted by the number of the names. It's a very unusual phrase, b'mispar shemos, they should be counted by the number of the names. What does that mean exactly? I guess on the surface it means, they'll take a roll call, they'll go through every house, and they'll say, okay, how many kids do you have? Well, I have Moshe and Chaim and Beryl and Shmuel and whatever, they'll list off all the names of anyone in the household who was 20 and up. The truth is, if you think about it, names really don't usually have much to do with the census. The first word, b'mispar, in the number, that's relevant to a census. When I'm taking a census, I usually don't care what everybody's name is. I care how many people we're talking about. Call them whatever you want, just give them a number. What do I care about the name? In fact, there's a little bit of attention, I guess, within that phrase, b'mispar shemos, and the number of the names. Besides understanding the phrase itself, it's striking that when you look later on in Sefer Bamidbar, in Parshas Pinchas, where a census that's similar to the census in Parshas Bamidbar is taken, but it's the census of the next generation. The census of the generation, Parshas Pinchas, the old generation has died out. It's 40 years later. The Pasuk takes the Torah takes the census of those Jews who were the Boi Ha'aretz, who were going to come into Eretz Yisrael. So they're very similar terminology is used to the terminology used in Parshas Bamidbar, but that phrase, B'mispar Shemos, is absent in Parshas Bamidbar, in Parshas Pinchas. So it's a strange phrase. First of all, we don't really understand what it means in its own right. And secondly, why is the phrase appear in Parshas Bamidbar and is utterly absent in Parshas Pinchas? Rabbi Cooperman, in his notes, by the way, points out, I guess you just need to do the counting, he points out that this phrase, B'mispar Shemos, appears 15 times in Parshas Bamidbar. So again, apparently it's a very important phrase for Parshas Bamidbar, which makes it that much stranger that it's not found in Parshas Pinchas, in what is essentially a very similar kind of parsha. And again, it forces us to think a little bit about what this phrase means exactly, B'mispar Shemos. Before we see the Sfarno's addressing of this issue, I think it's just interesting to mention another Pirush on the Torah that addresses this issue as well, but as we'll see, in a very different way from the Sfarno. The Baal HaTurim, here in Parshas Bamidbar, calls attention to this phenomena as well. This phrase, B'mispar Shemos, appears in Parshas Bamidbar. It's absent in Parshas Pinchas. How do you understand that? So the Baal HaTurim, in his typical way, says, this is illustrative of the famous Maimer Chazal that we know, where Chazal say that part of what enabled the Jewish people in Mitzrayim to be redeemed, part of what made them worthy of being redeemed, is that they kept their Jewish names. They kept their Jewish names. So, B'mispar Shemos, over here, means, as we're counting the people who left Mitzrayim, that generation who had survived and left Mitzrayim, unlike a normal census where you just count numbers, here in this census it's important to count to mention names as well, because the names were an integral part of getting the Jews to this point, where they could be out of Mitzrayim, where they could be counted, and where they could be ready, at least from their perspective, to enter into Eretz Yisrael. By the time we get to Parshas Pinchas, so that's already a new generation. The fact that they have Jewish names isn't so remarkable, because they didn't grow up in Mitzrayim. That's a new generation already. They grew up in the desert. Of course they had Jewish names. What other names would they have? But the fact that this generation has Jewish names, that's been mispar shameless. We should call attention to the fact that they have those Jewish names. That's the Baal HaTurim writes on this pasuk. Sfarno has a different take. He writes as follows: B'mispar Shemos, ki hoya oz kol echad me'oso hador nechshav b'shmo. Every one of that generation that left Mitzrayim was important enough to be known by his name. Hamore Al-Tsuraso Ha'ishiyis L'ma'alosam. Being known by your name, from the Sfarno's perspective, means that you're somebody of importance. We've seen this idea earlier in the Sfarno, in his writings as well. The Sfarno mentions this back in Parshas Vayigash, where it lists off the names of all 70 people who came down to Mitzrayim with Yaakov Avinu. Of course, everybody has a name, but to be known by your name is a way of saying you're a somebody. So B'mispar Shemos, says the Sfarno, means that all of the people who are being counted, the Yotzei Mitzrayim, the people who left Mitzrayim, who are being counted in this census here in Parshas Bamidbar, they're all somebodies. They're people of stature, by definition. Al derech v'aydo'acho b'shem. The same way that when Moshe Rabbeinu was talking to the Ribbono Shel Olam after the Chet HaEgel, he says, please, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, teach me about yourself, v'aydo'acho b'shem. I will know you through your name. meaning I will understand something about your importance by your name. Not just I'll know your name, but the name is an indication of importance. So this generation is a generation of importance. It's b'mispar shemos. V'lo kein kara l'dor b'ay ha'aretz. That wasn't true of the next generation who came into Eretz Yisrael. There was something special about the generation that left Mitzrayim. Again, we know they're referred to as the Dor Deya, the generation of understanding. And as much as we read about how they complained and they sinned and ultimately they weren't allowed to go into Eretz Yisrael, again, we have to view all of those stories from the perspective of a great generation that nonetheless made errors. You can be great and still make errors. Sometimes the greater you are, the greater the errors are, and the more consequential the errors are. But we shouldn't see that generation that left Mitzrayim as being somehow, you know, inferior or, an undeserving generation. They were a great generation, right? They were an incredible generation. It was the generation that received the Torah, the generation that saw all the miracles of Mitzrayim. For whatever reason, they weren't able to go into Eretz Yisrael, but they were b'mispar shemos. Each one of them deserved to be singled out by name because of their chashivus, because of their importance. In contrast, the next generation didn't merit this term of b'mispar shemos. V'lo nizkeru zulosei roshei ha'mishpachos u'mispar ho'ishim. When their census were taken in Parshas Pinchas, they were not mentioned by name, with the exception of the heads of each family, but the numbers were mentioned. You know, they were good people, wonderful people, but there was something special about the people who left Mitzrayim. V'im ze hodia shehoysa kavona sheosam ha'ishim be'atzmam yichyu v'yirshu ha'aretz v'lo yipoked mehem ish. By designating the generation that left Mitzrayim, by each one by name, but Mispar Shemos, says the Sfarno, the Torah is not only underscoring the fact that they were Anoshim Chashuvim, that they were important people, the Torah is underscoring the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's intent was that this incredible generation should be the ones to go into Eretz Yisrael. Again, it's a similar idea to what we stressed in the Sfarno just a few moments ago. The whole intent of everything here in the beginning of Bamidbar is that this generation should inherit Eretz Yisrael. They're unique. They're counted by name. They should inherit Eretz Yisrael and be able to take it over without firing a single shot. They should be able to go in without milchama, without war, be able to take over Eretz Yisrael. That's the divine plan at this point in time. And we begin to realize how much, unfortunately, the Chet HaMiraglim messed things up. You know, it really took what was the divine plan and really threw it out the window in a very, very serious way. In Pasuk Chaf, the Torah begins the census itself. And it says, "Vayiu v'nei Ruvain b'chor Yisrael," the children of Ruvain, the firstborn of Yisrael, toldosam l'shpuchosam l'veis avosam b'mispar shemos l'gugolosam. Right, these were their generations. Kol zochav b'ven esrim shana b'manal kol yodzei tzava. Right, we're counting anyone who could go to war from the age of 20 and above. Why is Ruvain referred to as b'chor Yisrael, as the firstborn of Israel? We know that Reuven is the firstborn of Israel. Again, hopefully you've been following the Parshiyos HaShavua up until this point. You realize that Reuven was Yaakov Avinu's firstborn. So what exactly is added by saying Reuven Bechor Yisrael? So here, the Sfarno writes as follows. Shelo nofal mima'aloso b'dinei shomayim. Reuven was the Bechor, he was the firstborn. And from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's perspective, he retained the special status that is due to a Bechor. And you may say, what do you mean? Yaakov Avinu on his deathbed basically took the Bechora away from Reuven. Perhaps he gave it to Yehuda, perhaps he gave it to Yosef. You know, again, in different ways, Yehuda and Yosef each received some kind of special character. Yosef in particular seems to have gotten the Bukhara. He got Pishtayim. He got a double portion, Ephraim and Manasseh. Yehuda got Malchus. Yehuda got kingship. But Reuven is basically left with nothing. Pachas kamayim al tosar. You were impetuous like water. Al tosar. You should not rule. You should not be on top. You should lose the Bukhara. So what does it mean over here, Reuven, Bukhara, Yisrael? So says the Sfarno, B'dinei Shomayim, from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's perspective, he was still the Bukhar. Why? Mipnei Tshuvaso. Because whatever Reuven did, whatever is meant by the Pasuk that describes that Bilbel Yitzue Yaviv, that he played around with the beds of his father, whatever he did exactly, but he did Tshuva. We have a tradition that he did Tshuva Ke'inyan. Vayiyu b'nei Yaakov shneim osar b'nei Leo b'chor Yaakov Reuven. Immediately after the Torah describes the sin of Reuven, it quickly says there were 12 sons of Yaakov Avinu, and the b'chor, the firstborn, was Reuven. So in other words, despite his sin, his tshuva enabled him to maintain that status of b'chor. But again, what does it mean that he's the b'chor? He's not the b'chor. The b'chor was taken away and given to Yosef. Afal pi shenafal mimena b'dinei Adam, says the Sfarno, b'dinei Adam, from a this worldly perspective, the Bukhara was taken away from Reuven. That's true. Yosef gets Pishnayim, he gets a double portion. Yehuda gets the Malchus, he gets the kingship. In this world, Reuven's not the Bukhara anymore. But from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's perspective, b'dinei Shamayim, from Hashem's perspective, Reuven is still considered to be the Bukhara. That's what Tshuva does. That tshuva has that power to rectify things from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's perspective. What does it mean from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's perspective that Reuven's the Bukhar? So what does that translate into? Not clear that it translates into anything in this world. But it means whatever special closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu a Bukhar has. And we see that a Bukhar has a certain closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. After all, before the Leviim, the Bukharos, the firstborn, were selected to be the ones who would do Avodah, who would serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So there's something innately spiritual about a Bukhar. So Reuven retains that innate spirituality from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's perspective. The only thing is, in this world, he loses out on the privileges that are associated with a Bukhar. It's very... The Sfarno's comments over here are very illustrative about what Tshuva does. Right? Tshuva doesn't exempt a person from Dinei Adam, from getting punishment in this world. Let's say a person goes and he kills somebody else, Rachmana Litzlan. So, you know, they try him in Beis Din, they sentence him to death, and he runs in front of the court and he says, I do Tshuva, I do Tshuva, I do Tshuva. They still put him to death. Right? Just because you do Tshuva doesn't mean that you can somehow wipe away the punishment in this world. What Tshuva does is it wipes away the effects of the Avera in Olam Haba. It wipes away the effects of the Avera from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's perspective, but the person still needs to be punished in this world. Adarabah, the opposite is true. When the person is put to death, right before he's put to death, they tell him, you should be misvada, you should confess and do Tshuva on the sin that you did. Why? I'm about to be executed. It's not going to help me. It's not going to help you in terms of the execution, but it's certainly going to help you in terms of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's perspective. So that's the same thing that's going on over here with Reuven. Reuven is still the Bechor because of his tshuva. It doesn't help in this world, but it helps in the next world, in the world to come. Okay. We'll pick up over here. Bez Hashem, Rabbi Chanan ben Akasha Omer, Ratzah HaKadosh Baruch Hu.